My featured musical this evening is a 50th anniversary tribute to Applause, which opened at the Palace Theatre on March the 30th, 1970, where it ran for 896 performances. With a musical score by Charles Strauss, lyrics by Lee Adams, and a book by Betty Comden and Adolph Green, it won the Tony Award for its season for Best Musical, as well as Best Actress in a Musical for the one and only Lauren Bacall, Best Choreography and Best Direction of a Musical for Ron Field. And it's my very great pleasure to welcome once again back to the programme one of the original players in that particular production, Leroy Reams, in New York via telephone. Hello, Leroy.
Hello, Rob. How lovely to speak with you.
And great to speak with you again. And looking up your statistics on the Internet Broadway database, this was only your second Broadway musical because you'd appeared in the chorus of Sweet Charity. And then suddenly here you are.
Right.
Here you are in a supporting role opposite the one and only Lauren Bacall. So how did it all begin? How did you first hear on the grapevine that the production was underway and, of course, the musical version of All About Eve? And how did you get around to auditioning and what role did you think you'd end up with?
Well, I had an agent and the agent submitted me for the part. I knew Ron Field because I had danced for him with Gwen Verdon on a television special. And I believe it was an Ed Sullivan show.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ron knew me, and I got the audition. I came and I auditioned, and the feedback was very good. My agent said they like you very much, and we think they're going to make an offer.
Mm-hmm.
So I assumed that was good news. However, I didn't get the part. Garrett Lewis got the part, who was a dancer from Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
and I was very disappointed, and I was then asked by Juliet Prowse to go back and do her nightclub act for the third time.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved Juliet. She was my first audition and my first job in New York when I graduated from college, the University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music, where I was a theater arts major.
Yes.
And so I was going to go back and do the act, but it was sort of taking a step backwards because I was going to play a role in the show rather than being in the chorus.
Mm-hmm.
So here I was back being one of the dancers in Juliet's act, so I was very disappointed. However, I was on my way, and it was around Thanksgiving. I stopped in Covington, Kentucky, my hometown, to be with my family, and Juliet's manager called and said, could I leave immediately because Juliet's now boyfriend, Eddie James, is going to be choreographing the act.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I really didn't want to go because I wanted to spend Thanksgiving with my family. So then I thought about it, and I decided I really didn't want to do it because I just didn't feel that I could not take a step backwards.
Yes.
So I called Juliet, and I said, please forgive me, Juliet, but I just feel I am defeated if I go back to what I was doing. I have to go back to New York.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. And I went back dancing on the Ed Sullivan Show for Peter Gennaro, who's a wonderful choreographer. And I was in the chorus, and it was New Year's Eve, and my husband, Bob, of course, that happened later.
Mm-hmm.
We were living together, and it was New Year's Eve, and I was very depressed. And I said, I should have had that part. And he bought a bottle of champagne, and we toasted champagne. And the next morning, they called and said they fired Garrett Lewis, and they wanted me for the part.
Oh.
We negotiated. They wanted to sign a year's contract, and the money wasn't good enough. And I said, well, I wouldn't do that, but I would sign for 6 months because Bob was writing down telling me what to say.
Mm-hmm.
And that way I would not be obligated, you know, in case things didn't work out.
Yes.
And also, Ron, I had had problems with him before, and so I wouldn't go without a signed contract. So once the contract was signed, I went to rehearsal. And, of course, they were well into rehearsal and almost into a run-through situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to learn everything very quickly, and I was thrown a script, and the first scene happens in Margot Channing's dressing room. I was introduced to everyone quickly, and Bonnie Franklin came up to me and said, oh, I hear you're a very good singer and dancer. Well, I'm not, so watch it. And I thought, who is this little dyke, and who does she think? But anyway, we became very good friends.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just her sense of humor. But anyway, I was thrown into the scene with a script, and Ron said, you walk in, and you go over and you stand by the closet at the end, and then at the end of the scene, you have your first line.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, since they don't know who I am, I should be carrying a fall, brushing it. And I said, and Miss Bacall, I won't touch your hair, but I'll pretend so they'll know who I am. And she said, my friends call me Betty. And I said, Betty? And she said, that's better. Mm-hmm. So I went over and I stood by the closet, and they started the scene, and Ron was directing and changing things as they went along. And finally I raised my hand and I said, excuse me, when does this character get out of the closet? Well, Betty laughed. Betty laughed, yeah. And that was it. It was an immediate bond. I can't explain it to you any more than that. We must have known each other in a former life, because from that very first day of rehearsal, we clicked.
Yes.
And I learned the part very quickly, and we had a gypsy run-through in New York, which they used to do in theaters. We used to, you know, do those once the rehearsal period was done.
Yes.
And people got a feeling of being on the stage. They don't do that anymore because it's cost prohibitive.
Oh.
You know, we audition now in small rooms. We rehearse in small rooms. And then we're thrown on the big stage, which is a big disadvantage. I don't agree with that. But, you know, the economics are the economics. So anyway, we're doing this run through, and Bacall was nervous. She was shaking.
Mm-hmm.
And no one would go near her because they could tell. Because in the audience at a gypsy run through was Hal Prince, David Merrick, and all the big people of New York Broadway theater.
Yes.
And I went up and I grabbed her hand and I said, why are you so nervous? It all depends on you.
Mm-hmm.
And she laughed and she said, you son of a bitch, don't you ever leave me. And I said, I'll never leave you.
Uh-huh.
And I held her hand. And that became a calming influence. And that was our little thing. We did that before every performance. I would come up, hold her hand in the wings, and mine would be the hand that she would leap from when she walked on stage. It was a little, you know, tradition that we created. And when we were out of town, we started dining together.
Mm-hmm.
And we just really became buddies. We became those characters in the show off stage and remained so for, you know, that entire period of the show. And
yes.
Then when the show went to London, of course, you know, I didn't go with it because my agent suggested I stay and do another show and not prolong it anymore. So we can get into all that later, but that was my first day of rehearsal.
Oh, great. So did you feel intimidated? Well, as you say, you sort of clicked straight away with Lauren Bacall, but before you actually met her, did you feel intimidated about the thought of working with this this great star?
No, not really. I've always been rather confident in my abilities. I study very hard to do what I do. So I mean, this is what I want to do for a living, and I enjoy it so much. It was just something that I love to do, and the people that I do it with, you know, and those people that do love it that way, they gravitate to one another.
Yes,
and I've been very lucky in the first big star that I worked with. I did summer stock between my freshman and the sophomore year in college, and I did summer stock, and I worked with Dorothy Dandridge, Rita Moreno, Jane Powell, Patricia Morrison.
Mm-hmm.
So I was accustomed to be around stars.
Yes.
And, you know, to me, we're all actors. So I was never intimidated, because why should I be? I want to love what I do and love the people I'm doing it with.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a rather easy transition. And and Betty and I just hit it off.
Yes.
It was a wonderful, wonderful friendship, and I am so grateful for it.
Yes, yes. Were you a fan of her beforehand and Humphrey Bogart and that sort of charisma that that couple had?
Yes. Yes, but of course I was musical crazy.
Yes.
I liked MGM musicals. I mean, Gene Kelly was my big guy. Mm-hmm. We both had the same birth date, August 23rd, and I wanted to be Gene Kelly. He was my idol. I like Fred Astaire, too, don't get me wrong.
Yes.
And Fred Astaire was the greatest dancer that ever lived, period.
Mm-hmm.
But Gene Kelly, you know, was masculine in his dancing and sexy, and I just gravitated. And also, the bastardized ballet-type dancing, it was the kind of dancing I liked to do. Although I was a tap dancer, too, but I liked his style.
Yes, yes.
And I did get to meet him. I did get to meet him during 42nd Street.
Ah.
So, you know, I got to meet my idol, and he sent me an autographed picture.
Yes.
So, you know, how swell is that? I never got to meet Fred Astaire.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to. And when I was in California, he was not, I think, that well. And I sent him some pictures to sign, and he autographed them, but he didn't personalize them. So I sent them back to him, and the envelope was returned and said, "Receive not opened, return."
Oh.
So by then, I don't think he was in the best of health. But on one of the pictures, Ginger Rogers had signed it to me.
Oh.
So he signed below her, so at least I have it personalized mm-hmm. that way.
Yes.
Oh. And that's my Fred Astaire story. So
oh,
the
good.
Two big guys, listen, I'm a musical comedy guy. I wanted to be at MGM. I was born too late. I did get to dance with two of the MGM stars, Sid Charisse and Ann Miller.
Oh, right.
So, uh-huh. you know, how lucky is that?
Absolutely.
And also Jane Powell,
Oh, great.
So, you know, yeah.
So it's quite an adventure. Well, getting back to applause, I suppose we'd better do so.
Yes.
Based on All About Eve, and interestingly enough, Betty Comden and Adolph Green wrote the libretto, and this was their only involvement in the production. Of course, they're known for writing lyrics as well as librettos, but do you know the circumstances mm-hmm. behind that, why they just did that while Lee Adams and Charles Strauss tackled the score?
Yes, and it's interesting because I was friendly with Betty and Adolph,
mm-hmm.
and you know, we became very friendly. And because I had worked in Lorelei, you know, later with them too.
Yes.
And Betty said that originally, when they wrote the character, they were trying to update the script because they didn't have the rights to the movie dialogue, except they did have the line, you know, "Fasten your seatbelt's going to be a bumpy night." But they had to go by the novel.
Yes.
And, the short story or whatever it was called. And so they wanted to update it. And hairdressers were, you know, palled around with the stars. And they also wanted him to be black.
Oh, okay.
Originally, when they conceived it, which is interesting. They didn't go that way.
Yeah.
But that was their original concept. And they were very free-thinking and quite liberal in you know, their attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about being homosexual never bothered me, you know, because I took Thelma Ritter and made her into a gay hairdresser.
Yes.
And that didn't bother me at all. I just am the kind of guy that you're an actor, you played a part. It has nothing to do with anything other than that.
Mm-hmm.
And you use your imagination, and you don't have to be that to play it. But I didn't really give two shakes about it, but my agent, of course, was a little concerned, afraid that I would be typecast, but I had never originated a role on Broadway, and to be with Lauren Bacall, I mean, how great is that?
Indeed.
So I didn't think about it twice. And it was interesting when we did the first preview out of town. We were in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, Frank Rich, who was, you know, became one of our great critics, was actually working at that theater, then the Morris Mechanic Theater in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And at our opening night, actually, it was a preview. I can't remember exactly how we did it, but I just know that the first time we did the performance with an audience, when the line came, you know, "Well, Duane, how would you like to take two lonely ladies out on the town tonight?"
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "I can't. I've got a date." And she says, "Bring them along." Well, the audience laughed. And then we went into the gay bar scene, and they were very, very quiet
mm-hmm.
because a gay bar had never been seen on stage before. And the bit was, when we walked in pantomime with the music playing, I walk up to the dancer who's supposed to be my boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
and I gave him a quick little kiss on the mouth. And then I, in pantomime, introduce him to Margot Channing, Lauren Bacall,
mm-hmm.
and he puts out his hand, and she shakes his hand, and I got the kiss. So that was supposed to be a joke. Well, when we walked into the gay bar scene, and I kissed him, just a peck on the mouth, there was like a in the audience.
Uh-huh.
And from that moment on, they were very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next day when we came into rehearsal, Ron said, "Leroy," I said, "Yeah, I know, cut the kiss." Because it was just too much for the audience at that time. We think of that now as, please. But back then it was quite an ordeal. And one of our reviewers said it was a lot of homo ho-hum.
No.
That's history.
Indeed, yes. So it was quite groundbreaking for its time. This was post the gay liberation movement in America, I guess, too.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was quite provocative that there was a gay bar scene and guys were dancing with one another and all of that. Of course, you know, we didn't think too much about it, but it was quite innovative and a trendsetter. And historically speaking, I'm the first openly gay character in a musical, mm-hmm. although they always had effete-type characters and many times stereotypical-type characters. But Ron Field didn't want that. And as a matter of fact, Garrett Luce, who he originally cast, was kind of a tall, good-looking, kind of leading man-looking guy. And it just wasn't working in the show because of the humor. Because mm-hmm. Ron wanted him to be presented as a real person rather than an effete stereotype. And I wouldn't have played that anyway.
Yes.
Because I am gay. I've always been out, and I never had a problem with it. But I behave as a person. Mm-hmm. And I think that made the role more palatable for the audience without it being a swishy Queenie type character, because we decided we fought very much not to have that, because we wanted a gay person to be presented as a normal, quote, person, whatever that means.
Yes.
And I think that's why it worked in the show, and I think that's why the character, the way that Bacall played it and I played it, that made it work. It was a friendship, and it was a trendsetter, and historically speaking, you know, I'm very proud of that. And years later, during my career, I have people come up to me all the time saying, when I was a little boy and I went to see Applause, or when I was a young man when I went to see Applause, you know, gay people weren't on the stage and there you were. And I just felt so proud and I knew who I was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very positive image for them. And I am so proud of that.
Yes,
I really, truly am. I didn't think of it as being important at the time. But it was.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. A role model for the gay community at the time.
Yes, yes. And of course, then when Bacall was going to London, I did the tour with her, and we could talk about Anne Baxter coming into the show. You want to go back to, let's take it in order. When Lauren Bacall was leaving the show, she was going to do the tour, mm-hmm. and they were going to replace her with Rita Hayworth.
Oh, okay.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't. No.
I'm sorry? Yes. Well, Rita Hayworth, and they brought her into New York, and the contractual agreement was that either party, the producers or Rita, could get out of the contract if they felt she didn't want to do it, or they felt she couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. They each had out. They put her up at the Plaza Hotel, and I was so excited. My God, Rita Hayworth was one of my idols. I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to be with Rita Hayworth. I was over the moon. So I said, can I come in and rehearse with her? I said, no, you can't legally do it. Well, you know, there's just the dance captain and the assistant director. And so I was just so disappointed. They did get me an autographed picture of her, though, but I never met her. They worked with her privately, mm-hmm. the dance captain and the assistant director. And then she more or less presented herself in the reading, but stories came back during the rehearsal period. Like there's a line where she says, she sings, with her falsies leading Lou Ayres astray. And she sang, with her titties leading Lou Ayres astray. And he said, no, Rita, it's falsies, not titties. She said, oh, the same thing. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot. And then later when the character said, she says, Dwayne, how would you like to take two lonely truck drivers out on the town tonight? And they said, no, Rita, it's two lonely ladies. She said, oh, well, he's gay, and I just got that confused. Well, then they realized that something was wrong, not knowing that, you know, she had Alzheimer's, which, you know, happened with a name and all of that later. They thought she just, you know, maybe drank too much.
Yes.
And so when she auditioned, she had problems, and so they decided that not to have it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the end of my meeting Rita Hayworth. I was so disappointed. But then Anne Baxter got the role, and she was wonderful, and I adored her, too. We also, the first day of rehearsal, I came in to work with her once she went into rehearsal. I was so excited meeting her, and I walked in, and Eddie Nolfi, who unfortunately left us during the plague, the AIDS epidemic, I shouldn't say plague, so the your listeners don't think I'm that old. And but he was very much 7, 8, 3, 4 on the beat, 7, that kind of person. Mm-hmm. And it confused her. And so when I came into rehearsal, I saw those big doe eyes of hers, and she was looking, and I said, honey, it's not that difficult. All it is walk, 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 touch. Walk. She said, is that what he's trying to tell me? I said, it's as simple as that. She said, and you, and she grabbed me by the hand and said, and you will not leave my side from this moment on. And it was the same thing.
Yes.
We became so close. At my birthday, she gave me a beautiful 1810 Waterford crystal ships decanter, because we used to talk about antiques, and she would tell me about living in Australia. She wrote a wonderful book called Intermission by Anne Baxter. Your readers have got to all go get a copy of it. Go on one of the things to get a used copy of it.
Yes.
It's her life living in Australia and in the bush country, you know, with her, with the outback, I should say,
yes,
with her husband. And it's a fascinating book. And she was an extraordinary woman, and I just adored her. I keep saying that over and over again, but I did. And we just had the same kind of thing I had with Bacall.
Mm-hmm.
And when we did the tour with Bacall, Anne had left the show by then. She threw a party for me, invited Edith Head and a lot of people like that, because she knew I would get a big kick out of meeting all of those legends in Hollywood.
Yes.
She was just a terrific lady, and went much too soon.
Indeed.
But she went quickly, which was easy for her because she was such a strong person.
Mm-hmm.
I also met Eleanor Parker, who was taking over for Bacall with the tour, and she was also a nice lady. I didn't do it with her because I left the show when Bacall did, because she was going to London, and I was asked to go with her. But our agent, who actually was Bacall's agent, and he became my agent because of her, said, please don't tell Betty, but I don't think you should go to London. He said, you'll have a wonderful time, and, you know, you and Betty will be pals and have a good... But he said, you really should stay and change your image, because you played a homosexual character, and you've got to show them that you can do other things so that you don't get typecast.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next show I did was, of course, I was offered Lorelei with Carol Channing, and I played an Olympic athlete, Henry Spofford. And that became my longtime relationship with Carol Channing, which led to Jerry Herman and, you know, my lifelong association with all of these people. So that was the detour I took. And, but, you know, not bad.
Indeed, indeed.
And then, of course, I ended up doing, I was to have been the last replacement in La Cage aux Folles on Broadway because of Jerry. And I went into, I left 42nd Street to do it. And then they posted the closing notice the week after I was in rehearsal. But I got to play the show many more times. And, of course, talking about being concerned about me playing gay characters, I also did Victor Victoria at the Paper Mill Playhouse and in the San Jose Musical Theater. But they're good parts. Yeah, and then I also did, I played Dolly in Hello, Dolly.
Yes.
At the Wick Theater in Florida. And only because I know the show so well, and I directed Carol Channing's last revival, and I appeared as Cornelius Hackle in her first revival.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had a long association with Hello, Dolly, and of course with Jerry Herman.
Yes.
And I'm very proud of that, by the way. And I always wanted to play the part, and I know that the English actor who played it in London, Danny LaRue,
mm-hmm,
you know,
yes,
played it, but I was the first, the only male in America who did an equity production of it.
Ah.
I'm sure that there were a few guys who did it on the sly, but and it has nothing to do with wanting to play gay characters, but why not if it's a good part? That's the most important thing. You just want to play a good part. And also, just another story about homosexuality. When I did La Cage, we were I got a letter from a lady, and she said, my husband and I, our son told us he was gay, and we disowned him.
Yeah.
And we saw your performance in La Cage last night and want you to know that we called our son today. Thank you.
Ah, great. Yes.
And I cried. I cried. So you never know in the theater whose lives you touch and the things that happen. And that was the best review I ever got in my career,
mm-hmm,
knowing that, you know, they understood it.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And I suppose briefly returning to Applause again, what was your relationship with some of the other cast members? I note that this was one of the early shows for Len Carreyrou.
Yes, Len Carreyrou. Well, during our period in Detroit, Michigan, we played Baltimore, then we went to Detroit, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes,
of course, Penny Fuller had replaced Diane McAfee in the role of Eve. And so one night, Betty and Len and I went out and had dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And we came back that night, and of course we went to call the limousine because she had limo service.
Yes.
And so when I got back, I got out of the car and I said, boy, why did I tell the kids about this tomorrow? And so, never thank you. So when I got to the theater the next day, she said, you sly puss. I said, what? She said, don't play innocent with me, you sly puss. You know what's going on between me and Lynn. Oh. Why do you think I let you come with us for dinner? I didn't know.
Oh.
I didn't know, Rob. It was a total surprise. But, of course, I didn't let her know that I didn't know. She thought I was that perceptive. So, you know, yeah, I'll pretend. But anyway, they did have an affair, and the agreement was that it was an out-of-town thing. And Lynn was living with Roberta Maxwell. And he told Betty that he was going to return and that, you know, it was just an out-of-town thing. And she accepted it, and mm-hmm. that's the way it was. And it's so interesting with people, Len Carreyrou. We became really, really close friends, as with Brandon Maggard and Penny Fuller. We really became lifelong friends as a result of that show. Mm-hmm. And I know one Christmas, Len came into the room, and he liked to go to Bond with Tellers, and he threw a present, or Bergdorf, I can't remember which department, but he threw a present on my table at Christmas. I thought, well, Len, I didn't get you a Christmas present. He said, I don't want a Christmas present. I just wanted you to know that I love you.
Yeah.
And that was the first time a heterosexual man ever said I love you to me. Mm-hmm. My father never said it to me, none of my brothers. And, you know, the first time a heterosexual man said to me, I love you.
Yes, yes.
And we're still very, very close friends. And matter of fact, I got a call from Brandon Maggard just yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And Penny Fuller and I, we visit all the time. I just treasure that time with all of those wonderful people.
Lifelong friends.
Yes, yes, very close. Oh. Lifelong friends.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that applause is hardly ever done in stock. And, you know, and
yes.
I mean, I will tell you the story because it is a true story. Betty Comden said, you know, I don't think that we're going to see a lot of money out of applause. I said, well, Betty had won the Tony Award. She said, well, the score isn't that good.
Oh.
And she said, they only revived musicals for their scores, never for their books.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was interesting. I mean, I'm not meaning to slam Charles Strauss and Lee Adams because they're terrific people and I love them dearly. But I'm just telling you the truth. It's just an interesting observation, and the show isn't done much.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's curious.
Have you ever seen a production of it, Rob?
No, I haven't. But interestingly enough, it was done out here professionally back in 1975 with Eve Arden in the role of Margot Channing. It premiered up in Sydney, but it only lasted a couple of months. It wasn't the success that they hoped that it would be.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. Indeed.
But so, you know. And I did get to meet Betty Davis a couple of times. She came backstage. What happened? I went home with Betty every night.
Ah, yes.
Because when we were playing the Palace Theater there, now they have the stage door on 47th Street. But back then, you had to go in an L-shaped alley because it was on the opposite side. And the people would get in there at night to ask for autographs, and it was rather dangerous. And so when we got back to New York, I said, you know, Betty, you should be walking that by yourself every night. So, well, what am I going to do? The stage manager isn't going to do it. The doorman's not going to do it. I said, I'll do it.
Oh.
I said, I will come down and I'll take you out to your car each night. You shouldn't be walking by you. She said, well, I'll give you a ride home.
Oh.
Well, that's a good deal, isn't it? So that's what we did. And so by doing that, I met all of these incredible people in her dressing room. And it was interesting because I have a thing when I do a show. I have, if your name's on the program, I have you sign the poster.
Mm-hmm.
And I had everybody in the show except Betty Comden. And she was coming to a matinee.
Yes.
And so I said, well, I can't get down because she's not going to see me. Betty, would you get her to sign my poster? And I left it in her dressing room. I came down after the matinee, and I knock on the door, and she'd come in, and I walk in. I said, did she sign? She said, yes, she did sign. She said, oh. And as a matter of fact, Leroy, this is Ingrid Bergman.
So,
how do you do, Miss Bergman? And Betty said, why don't you have Ingrid sign your poster? And I'm thinking, well, she's not in the show. But, of course, I said, well, please. And she signed it. Betty said, leave the poster here. And every person that you meet will have them sign your poster. Well, that poster has name over name.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Betty Davis, just every, the Kennedys, the Luntz, Bill Coward. I mean, everybody in showbiz, Yul Brynner, Joe Crawford, it's all on my poster. And that's what Betty did for me. And I met all of these people, and I went out with them. Many times I would be asked to join them. And we always had an understanding that if she was going to get, you know, people to ask her out, I would say, well, I knew that she would be taken care of, and I would excuse myself and leave.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but most of the time I would be asked to join them. So I had a swell social life and met a lot of fascinating people.
Absolutely.
And I know that we once went to a discotheque with Truman Capote,
mm-hmm.
and we were going someplace one night with Jack Benny. And I had met George Burns and Bob Hope, and I always and the three men always had something in common. They seemed so youthful, and I asked them what the secret was. All three of them gave me the same answer: I love my work.
Yes, indeed.
And that's what it all boils down to.
Absolutely.
And boy, did I love Applause! I just had a fabulous time, and it's all because of Lauren Bacall. And we would go home many times and sit on the bed and watch TV and order Chinese food.
Mm-hmm.
And we became those characters in the show. It was wonderful.
Oh, great.
She talked about Bogart a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, she always said what she said in her book. You know, she said, he was the father I never had, the brother I never had, and the lover I never had.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, her quote. And she had a very successful, happy marriage, and then when he died, of course, you know, there were a lot of expenses, and she had to come back to New York to work.
Yes, yes.
Because she was no longer, Humphrey Bogart's, you know, Humphrey Bogart wasn't around, and she was getting older, and, you know, the parts weren't happening, and she came back to New York because she's a worker, and she is a New Yorker.
Yes,
and
yes.
So she came back and began her life, and she rented an apartment at the Dakota, which is the famous building, and she bought it when it went condo or co-op, whichever one it is, for like $48,000, and she sold it for $21.6 million.
Oh, extraordinary. A good investment.
Not a bad investment.
Indeed.
And her auction, I went to her auction, and I did buy a lot of things, and boy, did the stuff go. I know that the wardrobe trunk, and it wasn't Louis Vuitton. It was a regular wardrobe trunk that she had in Bogart, had their initials on it. Hers sold for $48,000,
mm-hmm.
and the Bogart sold for
$65,000.
Uh-huh. So she made $6.5 million off of the contents of her apartment.
Amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
Extraordinary.
But she was salty. I'll tell you, she was salty, but she had a great sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And I could entertain you when the sun goes down and when it comes up again with stories. But, you know, it was a swell time. And Penny Fuller, her performance really made the show a hit because she was so extraordinary in the part that it took on a whole different color once she inherited the part.
Yes, yes. I actually got to see the 1973 TV version of it, which ironically was made in England with most of the London cast.
Yes, and I was asked to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I was asked to do it, but I was in Lorelei, and they would not give me the time off to do it, so I had to turn it down. But my agent then said, listen, you don't need to do that movie. Number one, the camera's going to be on her all the time. They cut your number in the second act, so he said, you don't need to be doing that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you honestly, it wasn't a very good representation of the show.
Yes, so you.
I don't know how you feel about it, Rob, but I.
Well,
I was disappointed.
Yes, well, the first time I've seen the actual production, you know, rather than just listening to the cast recording, so I was a newcomer to it, shall we say. But an interesting note was that a fellow Melbourne actor, Rod McLennan, played the role of Buzz, the playwright. So that was a point of interest for me because I've seen him on stage many times around. Well, once again, Leroy, it's been a very great pleasure chatting to you, and no doubt we could go on till the cows come home, as they say.
Well, but Rob, we could talk about it till, as I told you, the sun goes down and comes up again. But you know, hopefully your listeners have had a good time and so many more tales to tell. But you know, another time you'll call and we'll start telling you all the tales.
Absolutely. Well, this coming August, of course, we shall be marking the 40th anniversary of 42nd Street, in which you created the role of Billy Lawler in the original Broadway production. So that shall be another opportunity for us to catch up again.
And I still have one of my costumes up in my closet. I can't fit into it anymore, but I've still got it.
So until we meet again, have a great day in New York. I look forward to catching up with you later in the year.
Thank you, Rob. The pleasure was mine. I enjoyed it.
Great. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.